Well, I'm here with Jason Alford and Mukti Suyakmun, who are here today for the Indonesia update at the Lowy Institute. Welcome to you both. I enjoyed your presentation, your joint presentation this morning on the Indonesian economy. And I wanted to start with you, actually, Jason, with some of the good news that you laid out at the beginning. You talked about seemingly a level of agreement among economic and political elites in Indonesia about, you know, strong economic fundamentals, levels of debt, inflation, and so on. Could you say a little more about that?
Yeah, so since the Asian financial crisis, I think the macroeconomic policy frameworks in Indonesia have been very strong and, as you said, subject to a high level of agreement amongst the decision makers in Jakarta. So it's things like monetary policy directed at inflation targeting. It's things like fiscal policy that's on a sustainable medium-term trajectory. And there are some formal rules in place that guarantee that. So I think it was in 2005 that formally monetary policy was directed at controlling inflation. There are rules in place that limit the budget deficit to a maximum of 3% of GDP and put a cap on debt. And those frameworks have delivered very good outcomes for Indonesia over what's now 10 or 15 years, quite a long period of time. So solid growth around 6 to 7%, inflation outcomes that look pretty good. And the point that I made in the presentation was that that stayed in place despite, you know, over that period, Indonesia having, say, four different presidents, I think five central bank governors, 9 or 10 finance ministers, a parliament that has become increasingly activist and willing to stand up to the executive government on areas of policy that it doesn't like, which suggests to me that there's a fairly high level of political and public acceptance of those frameworks.
Now, one of the interesting effects of that 3% cap that you talked about is that it seems to have forced the government finally, belatedly, into some cuts on fuel subsidies, which are a huge source of, I think it's generally agreed, waste in government spending in Indonesia. What exactly happened and how big are these cuts?
So cuts to the fuel subsidy have been talked about most recently for the past, say, 2 years or so as oil prices were rising, putting more and more pressure on the budget. It was clear that something needed to be done. There'd been a couple of aborted attempts to reduce the subsidies over the past couple of years, which I guess ultimately struck the rocks trying to get agreement through the parliament. But the latest round, the government was able to get a change in the fuel subsidy. So they lifted the price of premium petrol, for example, from 4,500 rupiah per litre to 6,500. So a pretty big increase. But the surprising thing when you look at that, so the difference between the budget for fuel subsidies before that change and after, in fact, the amount of the budget allocated to the fuel subsidy went up, and that's because the oil prices had gone up, the exchange rate had depreciated in the meantime. So still a lot of pressure on the budget there. And in fact, Mukti in the presentation gave some comparisons of that with the size of the health budget and the size of the education budget.
Yeah, please, I might interrupt you. Sorry, sure. Mukti, I'd like to pursue that because from an Australian perspective, I saw that chart up on the screen as you were talking, and it was quite stunning to see the size of that graph and how high up the spending goes on fuel subsidies compared to spending on education and health. So can you say a little more about that?
The graph that I show is that the central government budget. So actually, the actual expenditure for health and education, there also some of, in addition to that, central government and also a local government budget. But you can see that even from the central government, the expenditure for the fuel subsidy is very big compared to education and the health. And then one thing that also not good is that about the fairness, because most of this fuel subsidy goes to middle and upper income group, which is this health and education should go to the middle and the lower income group. So that's also the issue of fairness about how government spend their money. And then it is true that actually with the fuel subsidy, of course the poor people will affected more than the middle and the upper. But then the government already prepare some assistance, temporary assistance to the poor. Although it's not easy when the government raised the issue about the temporary cash transfer, because then the opposition said that it's related to the next year election. Yes. So some people think that, but actually it's not big. It's like the cash transfer will be transferred to in the two times, like the first stage in between June and July, and then July and August, and the second is on the September and October. So and then the disbursement is quite good, like 90 for the first stage is like 93% has been distributed to the eligible person, and then for the second one until only for 2 weeks is already like 80-something%. So the disbursement of that fund is quite good, and then also the database for, because there's also issue and that the whether the recipient is actually the one who is eligible to get this the funding, but actually with the 93% of the disbursement, it also suggests that the database that used by the government is 93% correct. So mm-hmm. so that funds really goes to the eligible one.
Mm. Now, one thing you both emphasized in your presentation this morning is that although the fundamentals are reasonably sound in Indonesia, there isn't a great deal of appetite for long-term and deep economic reform. It seems like the cut in the fuel subsidy is some evidence to suggest that maybe there is some appetite for this. But what are some of the big challenges that lay ahead, which you think the governing class needs to tackle?
I think for the better growth in Indonesia in the future, I think the infrastructure problem is real, is the real issue, because like in the other presentation, it also mentioned that how the price differences between Jakarta and Papua, and it's most because of the logistic and also the transportation, which is basically is the infrastructure issue.
So physical infrastructure, roads, rail.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That because it's not only transporting the final goods, but also for the raw materials. I think that, for example, that there's a classic example that if we import, if we want to transport the oranges from Kalimantan, one island of Indonesia, to Jakarta, is much more expensive than we imported from China. Just to see how severe is the infrastructure problem in Indonesia, like within Indonesia itself, is quite expensive to transport from one island to other island. So I think the infrastructure, it's very crucial, because it's also have an impact on the investment, because then the foreign investment and also domestic investment may be reluctant to invest because they have to provide infrastructure by themselves, which is for big company maybe it's okay, but for the middle or small company to invest, if they also have to provide infrastructure by themselves, it will increase their investment costs.
Jason, infrastructure, is that at the top of your list?
Yeah, I think in some ways we've been a little bit cheeky that we've got a laundry list in mind, but we don't actually have any answers. And our point is more that there's no discussion happening in any of these areas. So infrastructure may well be at the top of the list, but there are many, many other things that the government needs to be looking at. So labour market reform, competition reform, the role of state-owned enterprises, you could go on and on. And Mukti and I haven't given any specific policy proposals. The point that we're making is there doesn't seem to be deep discussion on any of these reform issues in Jakarta, either from within the government or from outside.
Mm. Just one last question. A subtext that I thought I detected in your presentation was perhaps a rise in protectionist sentiment in Indonesia. Is that a fair judgment?
Maybe in the last like 1-2 years, there's a tendency to become more protectionist. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, or something, this bad condition that happens in the mid August until the end of August give the opportunity for government to kind of reverse that policy a little bit. Like for the mineral, they try to government before impose the plan to impose the mineral quota and tax by 2014, but with this condition, government plan to propose to postpone that that imposement of the mineral tax and quota. Mm. And also for the trade, a system for the horticulture and beef, which is quite have to have import licensing for that. With this policy, they also try to reduce that import restriction. So the government try to use this bad condition to make a better policy, policy reform. So at least there's an intention from the government to reverse that protectionist economy.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.